I don't know. Testing, testing. It's going to the right. I'll keep these on for a minute to make sure that we're hearing. Okay. I'm just keeping this on because there's a buzzing if you don't keep the headphones hooked up.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. My name is Valerie Brock, and I'm here today. It's Saturday, February the 20th, and I'm interviewing Specialist Benjamin Garnett, stationed in Fort Knox. And I guess to start out with, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, where you went to school?
Sure. Well, I'm originally from here in Frankfort. Was born in Cincinnati. I have to say that because that's where the hospital was. I don't like to claim it, though. I like to say I'm a native Kentuckian. And I can still claim that because once we were out of the hospital, my parents took me right back across the river to where they lived in Covington. So I'm safe. I'm solid. Kentuckian. Native. When I was one, we moved down here to Frankfort. And been here till I was graduated from high school. Went right over there, Franklin County High School. And when I was out of high school, I went up to Westerville, Ohio, about 10 minutes north of Columbus for 4 years of college at Otterbein College. And when I was done with that, moved back here. I've been in Louisville for a year and a half or so, and now I live in Lexington. So I'm just all over the Kentucky map.
Cool. Can you tell us a little bit about your parents? Were they military and what their names were?
My mother's name is Chris Kellogg. Neither of my parents were military. My mother has held various pretty cool jobs working for the state here in Frankfort. She was the press secretary to, I believe it was Governor Burton Jones. She was in Paul Patton's, I don't know if I can say administration, I don't know if that's the right term to use, but she's worked in the Capitol for about since I was crawling. My dad was an exec at the Motor Vehicle Commission here in Frankfort for 20 years. He retired from that recently, and he currently serves as an assistant county attorney in Frankfort. Neither of my parents were military themselves. I have four uncles on my dad's side who all did a single contract with the Air Force. And then I never met either of my grandfathers, but they were both Army. And actually, I believe that one of them, my grandfather on my mother's side, I just recently found this out, he was a public affairs officer, which is something that I'm considering doing with my career later on. And he was also a musician, which I am. And it was just kind of ironic for me to find that out. It's apparently you can't escape fate.
Is that kind of what influenced you to choose the military for a career after high school?
Well, I didn't enlist until after I graduated college. I moved back to Louisville, and I've only been in the Army for about, I'm coming up on my 2 year mark. It was April of 2008 when I enlisted. I have been a trumpet player since I was in the fourth grade, and I've been a singer since I was in about the sixth grade, singing with church choir and whatnot. Did them both in high school, and I was a music major in college. And when I got out of college and moved back here, I was looking for a stable career that I could use to continue playing my music. Because, a lot of people, they get out of high school, they get out of college, they used to be really, really good, and then they got to go find their grown-up jobs, as some people call it, and a while later they'll look back in their closet and they'll see their trumpet or whatever they played in high school and it's collecting dust, and they're like, oh man, I wish I'd kept that going. Well, I wanted to keep it going, so I looked around, and aside from moving to New York City or Chicago or one of those big cities, I found the Army Reserve. There is the 100th Army Band stationed at Fort Knox, so enlisted, did my basic, and joined them. So I'm a trumpet player for Uncle Sam.
It says in your correspondence with us that you had basic combat training in Fort Sill. What was that like?
It was the middle of the desert in the middle of the summer. It was 9 weeks of basic training. There are five different basic training sites in America for the Army. Fort Sill, Oklahoma was one of them. It's rumored to be the second hardest. Army Scuttlebutt has all five ranked in order of difficulty according to the rumor mill, and most people that I'm in my unit with went to Fort Jackson, which is rumored to be the easiest. So it gives me a little bit of bragging rights. Before Till, Oklahoma, it was hot. Luckily, it wasn't humid. Otherwise, we would all have been just running around soaked up. I lost 30 pounds in 3 months, and I sweated most of it out. It was a great time. I came out of basic training in the best shape of my life. I have since done my best to sabotage all that work. I'm gaining some of that weight back. When anybody asks me about basic training, the most basic thing I can say is that it's the most fun that I'll never do again. Because I would never want to willingly subject myself to that, but it was a very rewarding experience. The drill sergeants we had were very experienced. They'd all done combat tours and very knowledgeable about everything they were teaching, and it was fun. It was a great experience being in the Army. I mean, it's the Army. It was a lot of fun. We learned on. Well, what do you learn on? You learn on things from the combat life-saving course, how you administer first aid on the battlefield, to, of course, weapons training and maintenance, and lots of other, like, pretty much everything you can think of in between.
What made you choose the Army versus Marines, Air Force? Was there a reason?
Location, mostly. And the bonuses offered, and not everything that you hear about on commercials, on the radio, on TV, with regard to the Navy and the Air Force. I mean, they have music, they have bands, of course, but so far as I know, none of them are in Kentucky. The Marines have no bands in Kentucky. They don't even have that many units. But the Army's pretty much everywhere, inland. Since I was living in Louisville, Fort Knox was just a hop, skip, and a jump away from me. And when I got out of high school, actually, the 202nd National Guard Band here in Frankfort, I auditioned for them, and I passed my audition, but then I ended up not enlisting at that time. So when I got out of college, it was still in my head as a pretty cool career choice. So I did some more research. The Army really does have the best bonuses and incentives for enlistment if you are a musician. I got a rank jump. There's private PV2, private first class, specialist, E1 through E4. I started at E4 because of my college degree and because of the field I was going into. The Army considers that a civilian acquired skill. Like, usually the Army will train you to do whatever they want, infantry, engineering, mechanic. With the band and with some other fields like lawyer or medical or chaplain corps, you already have to know what you're doing. They'll just take you and teach you how to do it for the Army. So they consider that what's called a civilian acquired skill, and for that they offer you a rank jump. So the paycheck was very nice as well. Went and checked out the unit, went and visited the 100th, met some of the people, and Everything all told, I just decided that it would be a terrific second job and a terrific way to serve the country.
Cool. I see you had your AIT at Norfolk. What was that like? What was life in a day with AIT?
In Virginia? Well, it's just a couple miles away from Virginia Beach and being on the coastline, and that was in July of 2008, so still the middle of the summer. For me, after having done 8 years of marching band and choir and concert band and music, it was for me, it was just another month of stuff that I had done for almost a full decade. Whenever I try to advertise my job to recruit new members into the unit, I tell them that After their 9 weeks of basic training that everybody's got to, you know, suffer through and just get through, you go to 4 weeks of band camp. That's all it is. We did band camp before a high school band every year and before college band every year, and it was a lot of fun. We took more classes. These were all music oriented. We continued our education as Army soldiers and learning how to say sir and salute and stand in formation. For the band, what we call drill and ceremonies, becomes very important because we, our band, we perform for basic training graduations, for officer promotion ceremonies, for change of commands, very, very high profile events in the military. And so for our field, it's very important that we know how to salute and have our hand exactly where it's supposed to be and make everything just very snappy because we, on a daily basis, we are always being watched and being evaluated with our performance. So AIT was a month of them teaching us how to do that, how to, you've got 30 people in a block formation and they ask us a question or we give a parade response and we all sound like one voice down to a T. So it was a lot of training about that. It was nice having weekends again after 9 weeks of not. It was just more fun for me. More waking up at 4:30, just like we did in basic, and starting the day off with some PT. And then you go into music theory classes or marching band classes, sectionals. And then that was it for 4 weeks, and then we shipped out. We were very sorry to see it end. We wish that it had gone on longer.
So you went straight from basic to AIT?
Mm-hmm.
With no time in between?
Absolutely none. I flew out from Louisville Airport in April, flew to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, without anybody. And then when we graduated basic training, they called our flights based on where we were all going. Another guy, there was only one other guy in my battery who was also a bandsman, and he went to AIT, he was in my AIT class, so I was with him for the entirety, all 13 weeks. That was pretty cool. But we were some of the last to leave, and our plane didn't leave out till about 2 in the morning, so the drill sergeants woke us up and said, "You're out of here, get out of my hair, I'm gonna go home and see my wife and kids as soon as you're gone, so, you know, hurry up." And we got on our plane and landed in Virginia, took a taxi over to the school, checked in, got our barracks, and waited for the following Monday when classes would start again.
Is it really like you see on TV, you wake up with reveille and you go to bed with taps kind of thing? Or
with regard to training, when you're in a training environment like that, it's really different than what you experience when you get out into big army, into the actual what you do when you graduate, when you get into your job. For me, as a reservist, I wouldn't call it lax, but it's less than I imagine it is for active Army people who live on Fort Knox and do Army as a full-time job. We go a bare minimum of 1 weekend every month, and 2 weeks in the summer we go to our annual training. This year, I think we're going to Kansas. Our unit pretty much polices ourselves. We don't hear reveille because we report from off base. Friday night, some of our guys who live in Louisville will drive in from Louisville. People who live further away than that, we've got a couple guys from Missouri, one guy from Tennessee, one guy from Northern Kentucky. They'll come in and stay at a hotel room or some Army barracks Friday night. And then we pretty much police ourselves, we watch out for each other, rather. We make sure that we're all there by 8 o'clock on Saturday morning to get started with the day. But in the training environment, yes, it is a lot like that. Our battery and basic training, we policed ourselves again. We have night guard on rotating shifts each night, and then whoever's doing night guard in the hour before we wake up, they'll flip the lights on and come around and make sure we're all awake, and then we'll go out and do PT, and pretty much a very set wake up time and a pretty set go to sleep time, because when you're in basic training and you're undergoing all that physical and mental stress and build up, it tires you out, so you need those 7 hours that they'll give you very much.
And for people who are listening to this, could you tell them what PT is in case they don't know?
Well, in basic training, it was pretty regular. PT stands for physical training, of course, and we did what were called conditioning drills. Conditioning drill one, we learned as soon as we got there, and we did that every day throughout the rest of basic and then throughout AIT. It's 10 different reps of 10 different exercises that are designed to slowly build up pretty much every part of your body. You do squats, push-ups, sit-ups, jumping jacks, and whatever other exercises I'm forgetting right now. But sometimes when I've gone for a little while without exercising, just because of my job or school or whatever I have going on, I'll take about a week or 2 weeks and do that once or twice a day, and it works pretty well for how little only 5 or 10 reps of 10 exercises it takes you like 15 minutes to do, and you're done. You're like, oh, that wasn't much. The next day, you're pretty sore. It works pretty well. And we have a PT test. My unit has a PT test twice a year. Depending on your age and your gender, the requirements are different, but it's a certain amount of sit-ups in 2 minutes, a certain amount of push-ups in 2 minutes, and then a 2-mile run in a specific amount of time.
I see here where now you're a public affairs specialist for your unit and an auto technician. What do you do during a day of doing your job when you're actually on duty?
I'm one of several sound techs for my unit. We have our sound NCO, and he's got all of his equipment. We have several different groups in our unit. We've got our concert band and our brass quintet, just like traditional Army style. Over the past few years, we've been adding to that Army wide to match what's popular today in America, what the kids are listening to these days. We have a rock band and we have a jazz combo, and with that you get singers, and you have you go from a tuba to an electric bass. And so we've got our sound tech. A sound tech will go with those groups when they perform and hook them up with their microphones and their electronics and run the soundboard for their performance. And as far as public affairs, it's one of many jobs within the unit. And it wasn't being filled, and I was looking for something to do. So I said, hey, can I do this? And they said, sure. And for me, public affairs is... Well, we recently visited KMEA, the Music Educators Association, Allstate Band and Choir. They got together for their yearly meeting in Louisville a couple weeks ago at the Convention Center, and because I'm the public affairs guy, I was one of the people that went out there. We set up an Army booth and we advertised. We talked to some college students and some high school students, but mostly college students, about the benefits of enlisting, and tried to get them to understand how beneficial an Army career can be to your life, and honestly, for our career field, how nothing really changes. Basically, if you want to keep on playing, keep on doing what you're doing after college, and just wear a uniform doing it, we're the ones you want to come talk to. But public affairs is exactly what it is. PR. I'm the PR guy.
I see here you've performed at the Winner's Circle of Kentucky Derby and on the floor of the State Senate for the opening of the General Assembly. What is that like?
It's a lot of fun. I told you our 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summer is our bare minimum, but that's not at all the entirety of what we do. The 100th Band... I mean, not to brag, we're kind of good at what we do, and we get a lot of extra orders, some high-profile jobs, and they have included those. One of the other things we did a couple months ago, we performed alongside the Pep Band at a UofL basketball game. The Derby thing wasn't actually us. I got to say that before somebody thinks I'm taking credit. It was 5 of us from the 100th. Augmenting the 113th Army Band. They're the full-time band at Fort Knox, and they do the Derby every year. They go down and do Mardi Gras every year, too, down in New Orleans. But 5 of us went with them and performed at the Derby, and it's just a whole lot of fun. It's everything that I've been doing for, like I said, the past decade, but now I'm doing it in a uniform, and we still have the huge audience of, I mean, everybody. You got everybody at Churchill Downs looking into the winner's circle and watching you guys play. It's something that you can't really beat anywhere else. And the Senate job was a lot of fun because, I grew up, my mom worked at the Capitol, so getting back there after a while was fun to see the place. And, I mean, the state Senate. The Senate for the state. It's the entire Kentucky Assembly is standing there, and you know you're in a room of some very important people, and you're performing for them. So that it's rewarding at one time, it's humbling at another time, and on a third end, you work that much harder to make sure you don't screw anything up.
Especially with the Derby and thousands of people watching you on TV.
Exactly.
Says here you're also a military bugler and you play taps at military funerals. What's that like?
As far as my job goes, the MOS is 42 Romeo Army Bandsman. That's what that job is. To me, being a trumpet player for the military, no matter what the branch is, for me it just happens to be Army. Being a military bugler is the most important and most sacred of our obligations. When we were at annual training last year, it was at Fort Benning, Georgia, and we had five trumpet players, and we, since the active band wasn't there, they were on their vacation for 2 weeks, we went and filled in for them, so it was the five of us taking care of the military funerals that were happening on post at that time. We all did one, some of us did two, but that was my first experience with performing for a funeral. Like I told you about the AIT and how you know people are going to be watching, so you learn to get everything snap it right. And for a funeral, there's no place that's more important for that to be the case. When it's a military funeral, it'll be very, very formal. The Army chaplain will be there, probably many other people in uniform. You'll have your honor guard of seven soldiers with their rifles, and they practice their responsibilities just as much as we practice ours. Because anybody pulls a trigger on that 21-gun salute late, you're going to hear it, and you don't want that to happen. And what happens is, for a funeral, usually what will happen is they'll all gather. The chaplain will make remarks and say what he needs to say. The honor guard and the bugler will come to attention. The honor guard will fire their 21-gun salute, and the honor guard and then whoever military is also attending will present arms. They'll render a salute, and they will hold that salute while the bugler comes to and he plays his taps. We call it playing our 24 because it's 24 notes for the entire thing. And it's just, I mean, to say nothing of making sure you get it all right. I mean, you practice taps. You wouldn't think it's very difficult to play because it's just 24 notes and everybody knows how it goes. But it's just really important that everything for a funeral goes perfectly. And for us, it's a sacred job because it's the last chance that you get to render honors to a soldier. There's really not much more important than that in our line of work.
What's the process of getting ready for a funeral from the time you find out you'll be playing taps at a funeral until you're actually through that day? What are the steps you go through to prepare your uniform mentally, to prepare yourself for it?
Well, when we were at Fort Benning, it was in Georgia. None of us had ever really been there to Georgia before. Well, I can't take that back. I've never been to Georgia, to Fort Benning before. Some of the guys in the unit had because they did an AT at Fort Benning before I got to the unit. But you get your orders, and it's got your address of the cemetery you're going to. You got to get your directions and secure a government vehicle to make the trip. You put on your class A's, your dress greens, your dress uniform. But before you do that, you make sure that it's ironed and crisp and no dog hair, cat hair on it or anything like that. And all of your decorations and your nameplate are measured exactly where they need to be. And your shoes are shined and your beret is where it should be. You make sure that you're presentable. You make sure that you're completely presentable and nothing's wrong with your appearance. You make the drive. You get there a little bit earlier than everybody else, about the same time that the honor guard gets there. And you go and talk to the officer in charge or the NCO in charge, whoever is running the honor guard, and then the chaplain, if he's there. You say, "Hi, I'm your bugler for this service, and if there's anything in addition to taps that you might need or that has been requested that I can do, you just let me know." And you wait for a little while, and then when everybody starts showing up, you take your position for the honor guard. They'll stand under a tree at some military cemeteries. There's actually seven little stepping stones at the appropriate distance from the congregation that are marked, that are specifically for the honor guard. And then at one cemetery I went to, there was one a little further back on the other side that's clearly for the bugler. If there's not one of those, you go find, a shady tree or someplace that's far enough away that you're not going to, like, blast them because you're still playing a trumpet, and not so far away that they can't see you. And you wait. The honor guard comes to attention. You come to attention, and for as long as the chaplain's there, you stand there. You stand there perfectly still, and you don't do anything. You let the funeral run its course, and your cue is when the honor guard fires off their volleys. You play taps. You're finished. They're finished. You continue to be still as the chaplain concludes the ceremony, and then pretty much without saying a word to anybody else, you exit, and you go around and find your vehicle, which hopefully you parked in a kind of far away and unnoticeable location, and you're done. You report back to your unit and say, "Check that one. We did it. It's done. It went fine."
Do you play taps at the same time the guns are shooting, or do you right after the guns shoot?
It's right after. They fire off their 21, and then it's possible. This is something we learned. With a rifle, you can also present arms. You obviously can't throw a salute like you can with your hand, but there's a certain position that you hold your rifle in that qualifies as the same thing. So after the honor guard fires off their 21, they go to that position, which is with a rifle, the same thing as saluting, and then everybody holds that, and then you play your taps. So after the 21 is fired, your taps are the only thing that is heard, and then you finish that. Then the chaplain concludes, and that's it.
On some of your friends you've made, or comrades in basic and AIT, and where you're stationed now, or where you go, have any of those people been sent overseas? How do you feel about them being deployed versus you being here?
That last one's a pretty good question. I've kept up with a few of the guys that I went to basic training with. Even one of them is actually, he went into special operations. I don't think he's been deployed yet, but he's ready for it. Some of the guys that I went to AIT with, I've kept up with. With regard to Army band specifically, unless you're an active band, unless you're full-time, and even then, only some select few, there's not much likelihood of it, or I haven't seen it happen often, of bands getting mobilized. And as far as Reserve and National Guard bands, very infrequently also. I do have friends that I didn't actually attend military training with, friends from college or high school, that have since enlisted separately of me, who have been mobilized and deployed and come back and gone again. I've got one guy who recently retired from his contract in active Army. He's about my age. He's down in Florida going to motorcycle school, learning how to work on Harleys or something like that. But he was a light wheel mechanic working in the car motor pool, and he got mobilized, sent to Iraq, came back, and crazy man turned around and volunteered for another tour, went to Afghanistan, came back safe, retired. That's what he's up to now. One guy who used to be an Army bandsman in Columbus, went to college with him. He changed his MOS over to human resources. I made fun of him for it forever because going from a musician to being a paper pusher, I just don't understand. But he mobilized and he went to Kuwait for a year, and he came back. So I have had friends in many different branches of service mobilized to a combat zone, be deployed, and thankfully everybody that I know personally has come back safe. With regard to the bands, I've actually been actively looking for a way to mobilize, because for my job, in the strictest sense, my job is to provide morale. We perform for an audience, and when you're a combat soldier deployed in a forward area, you need things like that. So I mean, I know that with my job, I'll never be one of the guys that's on a front line, but definitely it's very important to me to do my part in making sure that those guys who do have that job stay safe and stay as happy and mentally fit as you can be in a place like that. And with music, it's a great way to do it. And we've been looking for ways to get mobilized, but so far nothing's come up. But you never know. There's never 100% certainty. I have to tell that to the kids at KMEA when they come and saying, "Well, if I join the Army, who's to say they won't send me over?" And I say, "Well, that's a question. It's never 100% certain. So I can never answer you. What I can tell you is that since I've been in the Army, I've never been mobilized. And with regard to the bands, it's only mostly some of the more premier active duty bands. 1st Infantry Division, 10th Mountain, 3rd Cav. They've deployed, they've come back, they've deployed again. They do it quite often. So that's the most certain that I can tell anybody else. But for me personally, I could say that I'd like to go. I would like the experience that would come with being a bandsman and being a performer in a combat zone. And more of that sacred duty stuff.
You also mentioned in your information to us that it seems to me when I read it, your military is your career. You were talking about maybe going in for some additional training and different directions your career might take. What are some of the things you would like to do in the next couple years, 5 years, 10 years? Where would you like to be?
Well, for the reserves and for the National Guard, it's an 8-year contract. 6 years doing the reserves, and then 2 years what we call IRR, Individual Ready Reserve. There's so many 3- and 4-letter words that stand for other stuff in the Army, it just gives you a headache. It's 6 years in uniform, going to your 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks in the summer, and then 2 years where you have the option to just go back to being a civilian, go back to your life. But if the Army needs you for something, they can call you up. And then once the 8 years are done, you're out. For full-time Army, I think it's 3 years in and then 2 more years IRR, as opposed to our 6 and 2. I could be wrong. So I'm in my first contract, 2 years in, still a specialist, which is it's no small thing because that's where I started. It's a great jump in paycheck. I'd like to get promoted once or maybe even twice before my first contract is out. That's the goal that I set for myself at the outset. Making sergeant is very important to me, because between specialist and sergeant is a pretty big jump. Even though it's one pay grade, you go from being a soldier or an enlisted man to a non-commissioned officer. Your responsibilities increase kind of dramatically. It's also important because it means that whoever your commanding officer or your superiors are have that much faith in you that you're ready for a job like that. So it's something that I'm really looking forward to whenever it happens. After my contract is up, I definitely do plan to re-enlist, because I mean, until something drastically horrible happens, something goes terribly wrong with me and the Army, until then, this is pretty much the coolest job that I can imagine having. it was just a circular bit of awesome. When I was at KMEA 2 weeks ago, I was getting paid to sit there in an army booth and tell all these other musicians how great my job was. I mean, how do you beat that? And after army band, if I ever do decide to pursue a different field in the army, it would probably be for public affairs, because it's something else that I have a little bit of an aptitude for. There's also a possibility, because I have a college degree, of getting a commission and becoming an actual officer, lieutenant, captain, colonel. And that's something that really appeals to me, because I think I could do it. I think it'd be a terrific challenge. And they have a little bit of an opening for band officers, but not much. But public affairs officer and public affairs NCO is something that is definitely in high demand in the Army right now. And sometime later on the line, if I decide to go that route, then I think it could be a lot of fun. Right now, definitely having fun sticking with my trumpet, and my unit is terrific. It's a terrific group of people, and they're a lot of fun to see. And with regard to extra training, some of that translates over to college credit, which doesn't help me any, but it's a very handy piece of information. And it all goes to the same place. Training in the first week of March, I'm going to a week of the Combat Lifesaver course, which is it expands further on that little bit that we learned in basic training, administering first aid and medical relief on the battlefield. Stuff like that gets you promotion points that'll help you when you go before the promotion board and try to make sergeant, like I've been doing. First week of April. This year I'm going to combatives training. There's four levels of Army combatives, hand-to-hand combat, and it's something I'm pretty interested in. And aside from that, it'll be a great workout. There's no reason not to go. When you're on training like this, you're still on the Army's dime. So it's me taking a week out of school and out of work, which is no big deal because I can make that up, and going off to get some Army skills, and they'll pay me for it. It's just more reasons why the job's such a good one. And like I said, if it keeps on being like this, then I can see myself easily doing my 20 years and probably beyond that. If it keeps on being as great as it has been, then I'll stay until they kick me out. Hey, you're 70 years old. We don't want you anymore. Go away. I'm done with you.
When you mentioned points and possibly seeking going from specialist to sergeant, mm-hmm. What are some of the steps you have to go through to do that? You mentioned points. Mm-hmm. Do you get the points at every training you go to? Does that add up toward that? And then what additional things would you need to do?
That's a pretty good question. Well, when you start private, E1, to get you from private up to specialist is just don't screw up. Don't do something stupid. Don't get in a car wreck. Don't go off base and get drunk and get arrested. Because stuff like that puts flags in your military file, even if it happens in the civilian world. But for private up through specialist, all it needs is time and grade and time and service. 6 months later, you'll get promoted to E2. Then about a year, E3, another year, E4. From E4 to E5 is very different. Once you get from E5 on up through the enlisted ranks, you're starting to fill slots. There's not slots for just soldiers E1 through E4. You can have, theoretically, an unlimited number of them. Once you get up through E5, to E5 rather, and on up through that, you have your slots. There's a specific number of slots inside the unit, and that's actually why I haven't been able to put a promotion packet in quite yet, is because all of our E5 slots are filled currently. So I need to wait for somebody to get promoted up to E6 or retire from the band or transfer. Something that'll happen that where they won't be there anymore. Maybe their slot will become open. And at that point, me and probably a couple of other E4s who are eligible will submit our packets and see who wins. But things like passing your weapons qualification and passing your PT test. If you don't pass your PT test or your weigh-in, you get red flagged. And as long as you're red flagged for anything, you can't get promoted. You can't get new ribbons if you're put in for an award. So it's pretty important to keep yourself, even though it's one weekend a month and we're just in the band, as some people say. It's really important that you remember that you're still a soldier, and you got to keep yourself in that kind of a physical condition. Points can include things like your PT test. However you score on your PT test, out of a possible 300 points, you can put that in. That factors. Weapons qualification, how many targets you hit when you go for your qualification gets you points. Mm-hmm. Civilian education gets you points. My bachelor's degree has me maxed out on the civilian education side. You can take online military correspondence courses, more military schooling, and that'll add to your points. Decorations or certificates of achievement that you've received from anyone in the Army, from any command, will count. It's a lot of things. How you've done so far. And then with our packets, we're also encouraged to submit things like I'll have a photocopy of my college diploma or a sheet with scholarships that I've received. My college transcript will be in there. The certification from the school I'm going to right now, like, it won't actually count for points, but it'll show the people on the board that, even though, I mean, I'm in the reserves, and here's what I've been doing with my life when I'm not doing Army. So it doesn't get me points, but maybe it'll make you like me more. And yeah, so long as you turn in all of that stuff and keep your points high up as you possibly can, and don't get flagged for anything, then the promotion board usually likes you.
Cool. I noticed you have a chain dog tags.
Yeah.
Do you have to wear your dog tags at all times, just when you're in on drills or on duty, or is it required to wear them all the time?
No, it's not. When you're in civilian clothes, you don't have to wear them because you're in civvies. When you are in uniform, whenever you're on the clock, when I was on duty at KMEA, when I'm on base for drill, whenever you're in uniform, you are expected to wear them because it's part of your dress. It makes up your outfit just as much as your beret or your boots. I just wear them everywhere because I like them.
What would be one of the, this could be a twofold question, one of the places or a person that you could play for that you would consider one of the highest honors, of course, next to, I can't picture much of a higher honor than playing taps for a fallen soldier, but what's one place or one person you could play for that you think would be an honor to you?
That's not a bad question. And I do agree with you. If the military funerals are very high up there. You asking me personally?
Mm-hmm.
I guess for our band or something like that, if the some kind of a state function or maybe even something in the federal government, the National Guard Band in Washington, D.C. made history with President Obama's inauguration. They performed right there, and usually that's a job for the field band or some kind of a very big name premier band of ours, or a Marine band or something like that. But it was a National Guard band that went and took that job, and they did a great job, and it was a very big deal for our community. So for us, for our unit, I would say for the governor being that we're in Kentucky, or getting called maybe up to something like that, play for high ranking state or federal officials or high-ranking military officers. We played for a couple of generals. They've always liked us and told us that they'll bring us back. We say we look forward to it, sir. Me personally, I'm not sure. I don't really know if I could think of one. Nothing really comes to mind. But we play for high event, high-profile events like the Senate. A lot of big names, and then also our brass quintet performed on the sidewalk for a Christmas parade back in December in Eminence, and I'd have to say it ranks pretty much equal for different reasons, but it comes out equal playing for an event like the state senate, and then playing Jingle Bells for that little 4-year old who's gonna grin at you and say, "Daddy, I want to be in the Army." It's pretty rewarding no matter where you go.
Is there anything else you'd like to know, for us to know, or whoever listens to this in the future about you? Or?
just my plans for my career haven't really taken flight yet. I haven't been in for terribly long. Maybe if you guys do this whole thing again, 5-10 years time, we'll be able to come back and share some very interesting stories or whatnot. But I don't know. This is one aspect of my life that without question or without reservation, I just look forward to. I love being in uniform. I every now and then I still, even though I've been in for 2 years, I still indulge in a vain moment. I'll put my uniform on and just look at myself in the mirror and be like, I am glad that I did this. I'm very proud of what I do, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Well, for future generations that may come in years down the road and listen to this, what do you want them to leave with as far as who Benjamin Garnett is as a person, or as a soldier, or as a member of the band, the military band? What do you want them to leave with you?
It's funny that you ask all of those points, because at various points in my day, I will consider myself every single one of those and some other stuff besides. I'm usually just a big ball of random. I don't know where I'll go next, between being a musician or a soldier or a audio tech or a student or a teacher or anything. It's a very, very strange and random life that I lead. It's part of what makes it interesting.
Just go with the flow.
Pretty much. And see what happens. Having just got out of college and still kind of job hunting as a musician and audio tech around the Lexington area, and being in the Army, my parents made me feel better by saying, "Oh, you're in your 20s and you just got out of college. This is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You're not supposed to be doing anything solid quite yet. Just float around." Makes me feel a little bit better about myself. I'm not sure. I would say that you hear the songs that they play on the radio, and you hear the commercials, and you hear all the stuff that the media just beats you over the head with regard to the military, just like they do with everything else. I mean, you'll see a commercial for the Army, and then you'll see a commercial for Cheerios, whatever. But regardless of all that, I would say that it's still very important to us to see. To see that 3-year-old at the Christmas parade come up to somebody that she's never met before, but he's got a trumpet in his hand and he's wearing a uniform, and she lifts her arms up to give the soldier a hug, stuff like that. It's a big part of what makes this job just completely worth it for me. And I would encourage people to continue to... they see somebody in a uniform or that's obviously military at the grocery, they'll stop him or her and say, thanks for what you're doing. And I still haven't figured out quite how to answer that, because to me it's just a job that I decided to do. And people who aren't in the Army say, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could do basic training or live with the uncertainty of maybe one day I'll be mobilized and sent halfway around the world. To me, it's just a job and a responsibility that I took when I signed my name to a piece of paper and I swore an oath. And to me, that's very important. And so even though I'll never really know how to accept random thank yous that I get, that doesn't mean you shouldn't continue to give them, because we very much appreciate it. And it's a big part of support that makes it that much more rewarding for us to do what we do.
Well, if there's nothing else you can think of that you'd like to share with us, then we'll conclude this for today. But if, as you meet your goals, or if you think other things you'd like to talk to us about, call us, set up an appointment, and
I'd be happy to.
More than happy to talk to you.
I promise I'll come back in 5 or 10 years with lots of interesting tales to tell you.
Try to get some members of those in your unit. How many people are in your unit?
Our unit is about 40 people strong. There are, in the world right now, there are about 100 Army bands total, active Army, Reserve, and National Guard, and about 5,000 soldiers. that's serving about 100 Army bands worldwide. My unit's got about 40 of them.
Cool.
And I'm trying. I'm trying. I'm trying. We'll see what I can do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.